Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Army? Happy Wednesday, or I hope you're having a good Wednesday. And today's podcast is excellent. It's with a dog owner that is dealing with working with a foster that she's working with. So all the foster peeps out there, this is going to be up your alley. She's got a Cane Corso mix, a big, powerful dog. No real aggression or behavioral issues. However, this is a great introduction to the prong collar. This individual has a dog. She understands that the prong collar is going to be the most effective tool for her. And so we go over the fitting of the prong collar, what size to get, where to get it, why we use it, why it's going to be helpful and beneficial. We also talk about another very frequently asked question, which is separation anxiety or codependency issues with a dog. So what do we do when a dog is following us around the house and whining and having issues with anxiety and what causes these things? So kind of two really big topics that we get often packed into the same podcast. So I hope you guys are enjoying the podcast so far. We're bouncing off the top of number one podcast in dog training on Spotify in the top five or the top two for iTunes. So just started kind of really doing this not full time, but at least more consistently twice a week. So the future is bright for the podcast and the lives that we're helping, and some of my reviews of the lives that people were not helping. So anyway, as usual, you guys, we're going to be answering podcast questions at the end of this podcast. I pick three if there's available, and I answer your questions. If you guys want me to answer your specific questions about your dog, all you simply have to do is leave a review in the podcast platform, and I will be answering them at the end of the podcast. So make sure you listen to the end. The other thing that I just realized is on Spotify, I don't think you can leave a review. You can certainly rate the podcast, which I appreciate everybody has rated so far. If you guys are listening to this on Spotify, this is 100% for free. I appreciate you guys. The No Bad Dog Army is strong as hell. If you're listening to this on Spotify, do me a solid favor right now. Pause what you're doing. Go and leave a review or rate this podcast so we hold that number one spot forever. Because I think we have like 16 reviews. 16 is better than none, but I know a lot of you guys are listening. About 10,000 people on Spotify are listening every week. So make sure you guys rate this. It would mean the world to me. And we're going to get into the podcast. And remember, listen to the end so you can hear my other questions that we get from other dog owners. And let's get into it. What's going on?
So I recently got this beauty of a foster dog named Gunner. He is the vet thinks he is a massive, maybe Cane Corso lab mix. Mm-hmm. He's a solid 95 pounds. Of course, I've had him just under a month. He's a good boy. We're working on like sit, down, stay, leave it. He's great with all of that.
Good.
What I have trouble with him though is walking him. We don't know his past. Obviously, as he's a rescue.
Do you know how old he is?
He's 3 to 4 years old, so okay. He's got lots of energy, and he plays in the backyard, but I would love to be able to, like, go miles and walk with him. Mm-hmm. And I'm not comfortable with a prong collar only because I don't know how to properly use one. I've never had to use one before. Mm-hmm. And the rescue had ordered me a gentle leader, but that doesn't do any good when I'm battling a 95-pound dog.
Right. Yep.
So, and he's not really reactive to, Like, if dogs walk by, he's fine. It's just I think he just gets so excited that he wants to pee on every tree, you know, all the scents that are around here. A lot of people walk their dogs and whatnot. So it's just like from one spot to the next spot to the next spot, and he's kind of pulling me that way. And I need help with that because I know he's such a good dog, but I want him to be able to go to a home and be able to take walks or go hiking or, you know, he loves being outside.
Sure.
Also with him, an issue I noticed is same thing like when we go to the vet.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's all the scents and he's overwhelmed. But you just can't bring his attention back to you. He's not food motivated. I brought steak with me the one day just to try out something else.
Yeah.
But he tugs me every which way. So I don't know where to start. I've never had a dog this size. And having only had him, you know, just under a month, mm-hmm. I don't know where to start, what equipment to use that may help.
Got it. Okay.
If that makes sense, yeah.
Sure. Of course it does. So so right now you're really only having some issues with him not being engaged with you and pulling you around on your walk so far.
If we're at home, and then he will be engaged. He literally follows me everywhere. He's always looking at me, you know, waiting to see what I want him to do. It's when we leave the house that it's like all bets are off. He's just overwhelmed, overly excited. I'm not sure how to explain it, but
okay.
At home he's fine.
Sure. Okay. So it's obviously normal for a dog. So the couple things that are coming to my mind is if a dog isn't taught how to engage, which means pay attention to the handler, look at the handler for information, look at the handler for permission, look at the handler for guidance. If a dog isn't taught that in general, doesn't matter if they're young or they're his age now, they don't do it because they're animals. So it's like, if you just let him do, you just let him be a dog. And that's what a lot of people do with a dog, is they just let him be a dog. And some people get lucky and their dogs never have any problems. And then other people let their dogs be a dog and then there's problems. Most people. So it's common for these things to happen. It's completely normal. And the other side of that is also like with the pulling and the, and sniffing and all that stuff, they kind of go hand in hand. So if you don't teach him how to do these behaviors, such as heel or whatever, then he's never going to just do them, especially being a 95-pound mastiff mix. He's not just going to say, okay, I'm going to walk in slow motion now with you, right?
Right.
So there's two things is teaching him. You have to teach him those things. You have to teach him those things, whatever you want him to do. You have to start working on externally. So just like anything in life with human beings, employees, children, and with dogs, you just say, hey, we are weak in this category. We are struggling with this particular thing. And with that being said, what you want to do is you want to work on the things that you're struggling with in order to make them better and in order to help with what you're going through. So that's really what it comes down to, is teaching him. If you want him to walk better on the leash, you have to teach him how to heel. And as far as equipment goes, the equipment is really predicated off of two things. Obviously, the size and the behavior of the dog, as well as your skill as a handler. And sometimes they balance each other out. Sometimes they don't. Like if I'm working a dog that's 90 plus pounds, it doesn't matter how good I am, I'm probably going to be using a prong collar because I need to be able to make really quick decisions so with the least amount of force necessary, the prong collar is going to give me that full directional pressure. It's not going to give me one point of pressure. It's going to give me 25 points of pressure immediately. So it's going to be less pressure to the dog ultimately, right? So, and what I mean by that is of course, because that doesn't sound like it makes any sense, but if you take a big giant piece of muscle, a 95-pound piece of muscle, and you put a slip lead on it, a harness on it or whatever, you have to realize that you're kind of just wrapping around it. But what the prong collar does is, because of its prongs, is it evenly distributes pressure all the way around. Like the Genaleader, but I shouldn't say the only difference, but one of the biggest differences between the Genaleader and the actual prong collar is the prong collar will actually add a correction and punishment that a dog will likely care about in a currency battle, where if they want to pull you to get to another dog, another person, a squirrel, whatever, the Genaleader isn't going to perform as well as a prong collar when it comes down to pressure. So when it comes down to push or shove, which is likely to happen with animals because they're freaking animals, right? No matter how much we love them, no matter how many treats we give them, how much we tell them we love them and whatever, if they want to do something, they're going to do it. So when you have a 95-pound piece of muscle on the end of the leash, the Genaleader isn't going to provide that consequence that's needed effectively to get the dog to make a different decision. And the prong collar, because of its pressure distribution and the amount of consequence it'll give with the least amount of force, like physical force, it'll make your life easier. So when you're dealing with, a 95-pound dog, you can use whatever you want. You can use no leash, but you just have to realize that, much like what I do, is kind of like what you're doing, is you're grooming a dog for somebody else, essentially. You're getting a dog ready for somebody else. And the more well-trained your dog is, or that he is, and the more control the dog is, the quicker this dog is going to get into a new home and on his way to a forever home.
Yeah.
So I would recommend using the prong collar on a dog this size, but you certainly don't have to, of course. Now,
I wouldn't mind it, but how do I figure out how to appropriately, because I've never used one.
Yep.
I have smaller dogs and I've taught them to walk without one.
Yep. So there's a couple different options. Like, the most important thing with the prong collar is making sure that it's fit properly and it's in the right position. So when you're sizing the prong collar, you want it to be right behind the dog's ears as far up as you can, almost on the dog's head, to be honest with you. If you've ever seen the...
I watch all your videos, so I know what you mean with the...
Yeah, high and snug. Yeah, it's like if you've ever watched the... what do they have on Thanksgiving? The dog show there, the Westminster, right?
Their
leads are the same. They're just not prong collars. They're just high and tight. Like, they are controlling. The reason why those dogs are walking the way that they are is because they have pressure, right? They're prancing for a reason. So not always, but anyway. So it's nice and snug.
Do you have to squeak right now? And so
the prong collar, they have different gauges, right? So it's going to be, what I would do is get a 3.2 size prong collar or a 3.0. That's going to be the size of the gauge. So the size of the gauge is the thickness of the actual prong. So what you hear me oftentimes talk about is the 2.25, which is a very small prong as far as the gauge goes.
Okay.
That will... essentially, you know, be for smaller dogs. So I would get the 3.0 or the 3.2. We actually have.
Is that something I could get at like PetSmart, or you guys?
No.
I know I looked on your website, but I thought you guys were out of the thicker prong collars.
I'm looking right now. I know I have some down there. I don't know if they're sold or not, because what we have down there and versus what is already sold are two different things. But you can get them off my website, buynobaddogs.com. I'm checking right now to see if we have them in stock. Right now we have two left in stock. Yeah, we have the 3.2 left in stock, and that's the That's the prong collar with the click lock. So the click lock is essentially like putting a seatbelt on. So you don't have to mess with the prongs at all until you get it fit. So it just clicks right into place with each other. It's a Herm Springer.
Okay.
So I would get that. You can go on buynobaddogs.com and get the, there's going to be a drop down on the size, and you're going to get the 3.2 stainless steel with click lock.
Okay.
I would also recommend getting a safety clip for that. And I would also recommend getting an extra pack of prong collars. And when you go to this site, it'll give you, kind of like Amazon, it'll say frequently bought together. It'll give you that exact setup. It'll say prong collar, safety clip, and an extra pack. So when you get the prong, what you're going to do is you can take the prongs on and off. So you can make it, you can make the length of the prong collar change sizes by removing a prong and putting a prong back in.
Okay. And does this, the 3.2, he's an extra large dog. Will that come long enough, or is there different sizes?
Great question. It does. I can't remember the, I think the, it's 16 inch neck size. But that's why I'm suggesting to order the extra pack of links, because you can pop extra links in.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But the 16 inch probably should fit him fine, because if he's, you know, like Akane, he's not going to have a huge coat. He's going to, you know, you're not going to have to battle with that. Right. So you could just get that. And then, like I said, get the extra links, because that'll give you, you know, if you need a little bit more room. And so when you put it on, you'll just take the click lock and click it, and you might have to take one out if it's too big, but you want it nice and snug. And it is natural for it to slide down over time when you're training, especially if you have a dog with no insulator coat like him. He just has a guard hair coat. So that's going to slide down over time just because of that reason.
So real quick with the fitting of it, you know, I usually go by like that. You don't want a collar any more than like two finger lengths. He's got his martingale collar on now. Mm-hmm. When you put that on, you said you want that kind of
snug.
So how do I know if I have it right? If that makes sense.
It's a great question. So what?
Right.
Yep. So what you don't want to see is and here's the thing about the prong is everyone like doesn't have a lot of education on it, so they don't know what it is. What you don't want to see on a prong collar when you fit it is you don't want to see the prongs actually making an indent into the dog's skin. Now, if it does, and I've seen dog owners do this, they don't care. Like, they don't, like, people are always like, oh, that looks uncomfortable. I'm like, you're not a dog. You don't eat cat shit out of the litter box. So there's a difference.
Right.
Right. So anyway, so you just don't want it pushing against the skin. You want it kind of just snug against the skin. So you don't want the prongs to be making an indent into the skin. Obviously with a German Shepherd or a Husky, you're not going to have that issue. You're not going to even see that. So you just want it nice and snug with a dog that just has a guard hair coat, and it's just going to be resting against the neck. And what that does is, so you have all those prongs, right? And with the Herm Springer, it has a distribution plate. So you're gonna have a plate in the middle that's going to turn the prongs going one way, and then the other prongs going the other way. So when it's sitting basically right on the neck muscle, right behind his ears, that's your power steering. That's going to, like a horse, right? Like you take a gigantic, horses are probably 5 times stronger than the average human being. I don't know. I'm just guessing. It could be 10 times more. Yeah. It could be less. But you take basically a gentle leader on that horse, and you can move them around and do whatever you want with them through pressure, because the pressure's in the right spot and they learn how to release the pressure. So in the beginning, my point is when that prong collar is sitting against on the dog's neck, when you apply pressure, when I say the least amount of force, I mean the power that you're using. A 5-year-old could walk that dog on a prong collar if it's fit properly, because the amount of force that you're using is very, very minimal. And when I say force, I mean power. The amount of actual strength you're putting onto the leash to give a dog a correction is going to be very minimal. Because when you apply pressure to the prong, which is why it's a safer collar to use, is because it's evenly distributing those pressures through the prongs. So you got a prong collar here, pressure, prong collar here, pressure, prong collar here, pressure. So it's distributing that pressure all the way around the dog's neck. Now there's a lot of uneducated people that unfortunately work with dogs professionally who see these pieces of equipment and automatically assume that when a dog pulls through the prong collar, they get corrected. And I have done, I don't know, 20 different videos of dogs pulling obnoxiously on a prong collar to get to something, and they don't care about it because that's not how they're used. So there's a but I get it. Ignorance is part of the life that everyone lives. So the prong collar, what it does is when it comes together, it distributes that pressure and gives the dog that really tight sensation of a correction. It's uncomfortable, absolutely, when you snap it and you correct them, but it's because of a, you know, because they're pulling you or whatever. So that's kind of how the prong collar will work. But what you want to do is you want to teach him how to do the behavior with maybe inside first before you're going out and doing this outside.
Okay. We started working on it. I watched one of your videos. You worked with a bigger reactive dog. It might have been a mastiff of some sort. Hi. But I think it was your video I saw a couple of your videos where you start, say, inside your building before you go outside. And then as you start to teach them, you circle, even if it's small circles, to get them to heal. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm saying this, like,
yes,
that makes sense. Because what I guess my concern is, because he's such a puller, even with the prong collar, that he's just going to still pull me. Mm-hmm. So how do I take baby steps to get him so that the prong collar works appropriately and he's not just wearing it for shits and giggles?
Right.
If that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah, people do it all the time. They put the prong on, it doesn't work. People text me, email me, message me. Prong doesn't work. Very rarely does a prong not work. It's a lot of people just don't know how to use them. So you just have to make sure there's two big components into that. Is you just have to make sure that the dog actually understands what you're asking, right? So you have to teach the heel command externally first. Like you have to teach the dog what the heel is first. So that's the first thing you should do, is teach the dog what you want him to do inside. So what I like to do, a very simple way to start introducing leash pressure to a dog, is what I call like a calibration. So, or tune up. So essentially what I do is I put the dog on my left side. What's your dog's name? Or what's
Gunner.
Gunner, that's right. I even have it written down. So you put Gunner on your left side and you start introducing Gunner heel, and then you move forward. So when we talk about a heel, the heel is essentially the dog at your heels. So
right.
That's just what my heel is anyway. Every dog person kind of has their own explanation of what heel is, but it's an in motion behavior with the dog at your heels. So you say Gunner heel, and you move forward, and you're asking the dog to heel, and then you'll change directions. So this is what you were talking about before, is you'll change directions basically at a 180. So you'll just turn, zoop, turn and go the other way,
okay.
And you'll say Gunner heel. So when you ask a dog to heel in the beginning, it's kind of like Alexa. You use your voice recognition, Gunner, yes, heel, boom, move forward. And then when you change directions to go 180, you're going to turn completely and go the other way. And you're also going to vocalize heel, which tells him, hey, I'm changing directions.
Okay.
A lot of times dogs will continue to go forward because they don't know what that means, and they don't understand that they have to stay in line with you. And then basically when you turn and they continue to go this way and you go that way, that's where they get that first correction. Pop off the end of the collar. And then they come hurrying back to you and they go, what the hell is that? What's going on? Right?
Okay.
So then you do it again. And what ends up happening typically by the third time, And I just demonstrated this in my most recent video with my board and train dogs. Typically, by the third time, the dog is tight right at your heels and he's paying attention to whatever direction you're going. So he's learned that he's got to pay attention to you, because when you change directions, he's got to go with you unless he's going to get correction. So there's okay. two things there. Is it works on both of the things that you're having problems with. It works. It focuses on the heel, which is teaching him how to walk nicely on your left side. And it also teaches him to be engaged with you, because he's got to pay attention. Because if he doesn't pay attention, he could get corrected. So then he'll start looking at you. He'll look at you. He goes, I don't want to make a mistake. Because if he makes a mistake, he's going to get popped. So for his whole life, and like most dogs, like if you go downtown at any city, it's interesting to see how many dogs are not engaged with their owner. They're in front of them. They're in front of them. They're pulling on the leash. They are, you know, rearing up on the leash. They're sniffing the ground. They're not paying attention, you know, and you know, this isn't just my opinion. This is just what I've seen. So I guess it's my opinion, but a lot of these dogs are on harnesses because they're not under control. So what ends up happening is, like, I was just downtown over the holidays, and we had this, I saw this really young Labrador retriever on this harness pulling. And so if you let a, so just like with kids, right, if you let them do that at a beginning stage in their life, you're already, so a lot of people, what they think is I'm just going to wait for the dog to get older to teach them, where it should be the exact opposite. Just like with kids, it's not like, let's wait for them to get 15, 16 years old to start teaching them the alphabet, to start teaching them how to live their life, right? So my point was, I'm looking at this dog pulling, and every dog that he saw, and he was a sweet dog, and the owners were probably as sweet as pie too, no faulty to them, but I'm watching this dog pull and lunge after all these other dogs with excitement, and every single person came up and said, oh my God, your dog's so cute. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, you're rewarding your dog for behaviors you're going to kick your own ass about in the future, because your dog is going to drag you everywhere you go. Your dog is going to go up and greet every person they see. Every dog they see, they're going to lunge to try to meet, because you're enabling and allowing all that to happen right now. And so my point by all of this is, what you need to do is start off in very small steps inside your home, in the garage, in the backyard, in your living room, in your kitchen, wherever you have space, in your hallway, and just start off gunner heel. You move forward and you turn, go the other way, gunner heel. You're telling him, hey buddy, I'm going this way. And if he doesn't, pop, he gets that correction. And then you're moving and you're not looking at him. And if you watch my videos, you know, it's really big. Your leash pressure's down. You're not holding it up in the air. Your shoulders are, he is with you. You're not with him. Your shoulders
are facing forward.
Right. So then you do it again. You turn, you say gunner heel, and maybe he has a little bit of hang time, pop. And he goes, what the? And then usually by that second or third time, the dog is so in tune with you, because they've got correct, hey, pay attention to me. This is what you need to be doing. And that's important, because, again, like the little lab puppy, your dog may love you, but your dog is not going to listen to you. Your dog is not going to respect you. Your dog is not going to engage with you at all, because you're not setting these tones of like, hey, you got to have this structure. It's not a dog's lives are not free for alls. They don't like that. They don't do well. I don't do well with that. I did a blog in my members club the other day about, I was on vacation for 5 days in one of the most beautiful places in the United States, in Colorado. And by the third day, I was like, I need something to do. I got to go work. I got to, you know, some people it takes a little bit longer, but my point is animals, if you let them live even a week without structure, they go loony and they go, I'm going to go make decisions on my own. So a lot of what I'm saying is a lot of information for you to really think about how you want to handle these situations. So as you're doing this, the most important thing at the end of this is a break command. So it's a release command. It's going to be
I tell them, okay.
Sure. That's fine. That's fine. So you can just say, okay. So in the beginning, it's going to be pay attention to me, pay attention to me. Once he slides, you're going to feel that pocket happen. You're going to feel him slide into place. You're going to feel him say, okay, I got this. Good heel. Good heel. And then you get a couple seconds, 5 to 7 seconds in a good heel. You're going to stop. You don't have to ask him to sit, but you're going to stop. And then you're going to go, okay. And then you might throw a toy in front of him or a treat in front of him. And now he's on his break. Now he's on his release. And that's okay. How you're going to start introducing leash pressure. Very micro in a very small, distracted environment. And then you copy and paste that into other environments as you get better and better.
Well, and so when I'm just starting out with him, say I just do it in the house here because it's for you. I live just outside of Buffalo, so you know it's probably just as cold for you. What do I work with him for, like 10 minutes and then give him a like?
Good question. Yeah.
Is there a way to work up time with him?
Exactly. Exactly. So there's a way to work up the duration and his thresholds of just like anything else, right? Literally anything else. You want to say you're not a runner or you're not a swimmer or you're not a whatever. You just, all you do is you keep building up each day. So what I would suggest is in your mind, pick a goal. So say you have a hallway. So you have a hallway, one end of your home to the other end of your home. You put them on your left side, you say gun or heel, you walk to the end of the hallway, you turn around, you break. Now your goal should be maybe by the end of the day, I want you. So your goal is for him not to pull on the leash. Your goal is to keep that leash loose. That's your goal.
Right.
And so you create your own. So sometimes it's 30 seconds and then break, but your whole, so you can do 30 seconds and then break, 30 seconds and then break, but your whole durational time of actually training, 10, 15 minutes. As many times as you want throughout the day. You want to keep it short and sweet in the beginning.
Also, is there a reason you say left side? I'm right side dominant and no. It's awkward for me.
Yeah,
for
so
the left side?
The most important thing is being consistent. So the left side is like the tradition. I don't want to say I can't, but I do not handle dogs on my right side because it's weird for me. I always handle dog on my left side. It's like the most traditional side to handle a dog. The reason being is because, so in theory, there's many different reasons and speculations, but in theory, the most thing that made the most sense to me is when you're handling, most people are right-handed, as am I. When you're handling a dog on the left side, you don't want to have, if you handle them on the right, then you can't do, I don't want to say you can't do anything, but your dominant hand is now occupied. So when you're out and you're working with your, you know what I'm saying? When you're out and you're working with your dog, you should have your dominant hand free to carry things, catch yourself if you fall, open a car, whatever. So that's, but to be honest with you, I don't care if you walk him with your feet, as long as it's consistent, it doesn't matter. Just don't let him go left to right, right to left, because consistency is key. And dogs are very conditioned animals. Very conditioned. Like you grab the leash and your dog's like, oh, we're going for a walk. How do they know that? Conditioning. So when you're out and you're handling the dog, make sure you're just consistent because you want to provide them structure and you want to provide them with as much, I guess, routines as you possibly can to keep him. He's going to be happier that way.
Yeah, we are on like his nap times are even on a set schedule. Go. Like, I'm kind of a nut when it comes to that. And I think that's really, really helped him. But we'll see. The walking, like I said, is the biggest thing. So I'm thinking starting inside and maybe going a week inside with practicing the walking. He goes outside and runs around in the backyard. So he gets his energy out. But then would you say then maybe I should, instead of taking him for a walk after that, taking him to the fenced-in backyard where there is, you know, there might be dogs walking by, people walking by, and do that for a while before I attempt outside of the yard?
Yes.
Like kind of just work it up?
Yep, exactly. You work it up. And if you bite off more than you can chew, you'll know. You're like, okay, this is terrible. And that's where you pull the reins back and take it down a notch. And you incrementally build it up. That's all it is.
Okay. The other question I have with him is, you could probably hear him whining in the background. Being a rescue, I imagine this is why. So I have him on a schedule and he goes in his crate and he sleeps and he's fine. But when he is awake, He is right here by my side at all times, and I'm home all day, so he's got that attachment, or because mm-hmm. I rescued him, or whatever the case. Mm-hmm. If I get up, say I let him sit on the couch and, you know, chew his bones and whatever. But if I go to get up, it's like he panics and he has to follow me. The dog goes in, like, he'll go into the bathroom when I'm walking in there. Mm-hmm. How do you work on him, like, calm down? I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I think a couple things. Yeah.
He's still very new to me, so who knows what happened prior to this, but.
Yeah, I just find a lot of dogs that have been, who aren't, you know, I think like people too, it becomes like this attachment, sometimes this unhealthy codependency attachment type thing, where if they're not used to stability, like my dogs, if I walk out the door, they're like, see you later, dude, you know?
Right.
I mean, of course, they, you know, they'd rather go and walk and play, but, you know, they're not, you know, beating the door down. So I think it's natural for dogs who don't have stability and then finally get it to say, hey, I'm not letting you go because this is great. Or, you know, hey, you're providing me structure that I've never had, and this is also great. Tell me what to do next. And then when you walk out of the room, it's like, I don't know how to handle life without you. Sometimes that happens. So what I would suggest is turn the love down, turn the leadership up, less talking, more doing. So instead of talking to him whenever he gives you information, don't talk to him back. So a lot of this anxiety and this codependency happens with relationships. So your relationship should change a little bit where you're less talking to him, less having that conversation with him, because you got to think, like, it's almost like calling somebody, like in the sense of you're trying to talk to him, you're trying to get him on the other end of the line. Every time you look at him, and he knows when you're looking at him, and he knows when you're talking to him, every time that you say something to him out of his mouth, he will then try to pick up, and he doesn't know how because he doesn't know what you're saying. So then it becomes this anxious thing where he's like, I really like you a lot, but man, I don't understand what you're saying. So he's just holding on to you, and he's just trying to do the best he can to be there for you because he doesn't feel like you know what you're doing. This is, I don't know. I don't know if this definitely happens to most people. But what ends up happening is think about a relationship where you are dropped into somebody else's home that they don't speak your language. And you're kind of nervous, you're vulnerable, you're trying to figure things out. You know it's a safe place, and you know there's love, but you just don't understand each other. And so I find less love, more leadership. So the times that you... So here's what happens, okay? You get up, you go in the other room to grab a sweatshirt, and the dog gets up, looks at you. It's okay, buddy, I'm just going in the other room to get a sweatshirt. It's okay, buddy, I'm just going in the other room for a sweatshirt. That's 14, 13 commands.
I'm not even kidding. I'm pretty sure I've said that to him.
Oh, I know.
Those lines, because I do, and it sounds so stupid because I do want him to, like, really just stay there and chew your toy, I know. You know?
Yeah, no, I heard you say it a couple different times, and, you know, my job, I'm not in the dog business, I'm in the people business. There's no sense at all if somebody's saying, hey, are you good with dogs? That's how I've built my entire life. There's no doubt, you know, I have a strong ability to work with dogs, but my most valuable asset is being able to communicate with humans of what they're doing is wrong. And so with dogs who have behavioral issues. So anyway, so just know that when you get up and go do stuff, like the moment you say, hey, he's like, oh, I got to come. I don't know what you just said. I don't know what you know, it's kind of like your best friend, your significant other, maybe your boss, whatever, just popping in the room and saying gibberish, but in a very kind of frantic way, you're going to follow him out the room. What did you say? Hey, Jimmy, what did you say? Right? You don't know what they said. But if you just get up and go, you're not going to create that anxious, what's going on? Is something wrong? Is something, because that's what he's trying to, he doesn't know you just, oh, closet, sweatshirt, got it. I'll be here chewing my, he doesn't understand English. So I think.
Well, even when I get up from the couch and I come into the kitchen and I don't say anything to him, And I try to kind of like ignore them in a sense, because obviously what I was doing isn't working when I talk to them. But
right.
I will come and say I'm sitting right here in the kitchen where I'm at. He's got to be right next to me. Right. And if I get up and walk to my room, he's going to follow me, whether I say anything to him or not.
Yeah. No, so I don't. Yeah, but it starts with all the times that you have said something to him.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that when you say something to him, you're Velcroing him to you and he's going to stick to you. And then you're like, well, I didn't say anything this time and he didn't. I'm just saying over time, if you talk to him, that's what I said. As I turn the love down,
yeah,
turn the leadership up. And when I mean love, it comes in all forms. You're just, I understand what you're saying. Like you just want him to be comfortable. You want to say, hey, baby, it's okay. Chew on your bone. You're good. Yeah. You're bed. You're cozy. I'll be right. I understand all of that. It makes sense to me, but I speak English.
Yeah. Right.
So again, I'm just kind of giving you feedback on why that can be the reason why dogs start to get very attached is because they're confused and they're like, I love you, but I don't understand what you're saying. And so for me not to fail, I'm just going to hold on to your leg as you go around the house like a little kid.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that the talking created this. That could have. I'm just saying that that is 100% definitely a component to why dogs become more attached and more codependent than others, is because they're trying desperately to figure out what this new person that is now treating this dog like a good dog and taking care of this dog, and he's like, you know, little orphan Annie type stuff. Finally, we have a house and we have fresh water and we have love and we have structure and we have training and you've signed up for professional services. I mean, all of this stuff is new and great. He doesn't want to ever let that go. But the more confusion you add to just make things clearer to him. So when you get up and you walk into the other room, don't look at him. Don't talk to him. Don't say, I'll be right back. And then run. Just get up, just get up and go and then come back. And over time, what ends up happening is hopefully, because dogs are very conditioned, like you went to the other room, you went to the bathroom, you went and did this and you came back. Nothing, you're good. Nothing happened. Like you're good. And he's going to go, okay, maybe I don't have to follow this person. But if you look at him directly in the face and say, hey, buddy, I'm going to go in the other room. And when I get back, he's going to go, oh shit, I don't know what you're saying, but I'll go with you. It's time to go. You know, and then he comes over to you, you pet him on the head. It's okay, buddy. He's like, yeah, I'm here. And then you walk away. And of course he's going to follow you because he has no idea what you just said.
Right.
You know, so I think there's that. And then the other thing is just working on obedience to counter some of that. Even if you never talk to him ever, because I'm not saying that's the reason, but that is definitely the reason for most people, for most dogs. I would say working on your countering obedience. So what does that mean? So if somebody knocks on my door right now or I'm upstairs in like my spare little office area, but if downstairs somebody rang my doorbell, my dog would bark, Lakota would bark, and I don't expect her not to. But my point is I would be able to say, go to your bed, zoop, down, boom, stay. Now we're in. So it almost counters the idea of what she feels like she has to do with. It's kind of like kids where they're like, why? Well, because mommy or daddy said so. That you don't have to explain to them why they can't drink a bottle of vodka because they think it's water. Because I said so, right? You just got to do it. It's for your own good. Trust me. But dogs aren't like that. You just have to say, hey, so my point is you get up and you say, Gunner, go to your bed. He goes to his bed. You say, Gunner, down. He downs. You say, Gunner, stay. He stays. You walk in to the bathroom, take a shower, come back out. He's still there. You go over, you pet him. Good, stay, buddy. Okay, now. And your break would be okay. And that's it. So, again, like we talked about with healing, is, of course, you're not going to be able to get up right now and go do that because his place maybe isn't there, his bed, his stay isn't that good yet, etc. But you build up into that point. So you start off with teaching him place on the leash with food, and you don't have to do a down. Naturally, dogs will down if you just work on the place and stay, or the bed and stay. And then you're going to have an opportunity to move throughout your house. So in the beginning, you're going to teach him these things externally. And then what you're going to do is you're going to start testing them. So in the beginning, you might have a 15-foot long line in your house. So you put them next to your chair there. And it doesn't have to be this giant production. It doesn't have to be a bed if he doesn't have one. You can use the crate, or you can use a small little blanket on the ground. It doesn't have to be this big thing.
And I was going to ask, does it need to be like one of those things that you use off the ground or the cots?
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. Because I, you know, I work with people from all over, and so some people don't have room for that, you know. And it doesn't have to be, especially for a big dog, you know, like that. It's going to take up a lot of space. You can just use, you just want to use something other than the ground. So yoga mat, blanket, a little bed. You could take.
Oh, yoga mat's a good idea. I have one of those. That would be perfect.
So you just teach in place. So, here's the kicker, right? Is you have to teach in place first before you do any of this, because it's a sequence, right? It's kind of like a golf swing or teaching ballerina to make a dance. Like you do things very individually to make a recital or a hole in one. So that's what you're doing, and so that helps too. Because you got to realize, like, again, like with kids, I say kids because it's very easy human psychology for people to understand. Some people have kids, but everybody was a kid at some point. So, like with kids, if you get up and you go in the other room, they're like, I got to come with you. If you don't have anything to counter that, to say, here's what I want you to do differently, it's your leverage is gone. So if you get up to go to the other room, and maybe you are showering and it's not going to be running to the closet to grab something and coming back or whatever it is, whatever the hell, it doesn't matter what the hell you're doing.
Yeah.
You should be saying, Gunnar, go to your bed. He goes to his bed and just say, stay. And you got to work on all that stuff until you come back and then break him. But over time, in the beginning, it's very short. The duration is 10 seconds. You're not moving away from the bed at all. And you build that out. So at least, if he does feel like, I got to go with you, that's natural. That's normal. Dogs are always going to want to be on the other side of the door for the most part.
Right.
You know? They're always going to want to go. But if you say, hey, go to your bed and lay down, at least you have leverage to counter that.
Okay. So when you say go to your bed, I say go to your room. So it's like their own little room.
Is that
room.
The crate?
Either way. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Which he doesn't mind. He doesn't mind the crate. But when it comes to place, say I'm going to take a shower. Mm. Am I telling him to go to the crate, or am I going to work my way up for him to place until I get back?
It's a good question.
I
personally, like right now, what I would do is not necessarily see here. Okay. So here's what's going on in my head right now is if you tell him to go to his place or his crate, at some point within your half an hour shower, he's going to get up and you're not going to have any ability to tell him that that's not okay.
Right.
So what you can do is in the beginning. So here's what I would do. So say his place and his stay is decent. You've been working on it for a couple of days. It's decent. He understands it. He's hungry for food. You're working good. So what I would do is I would put him into a place, a stay. I would go into the bathroom, hold it for 1, 2, 3, come out, pay him. Okay, break. And I would do this like throughout the day, like as often as you can. So you going into the bathroom, right? Your clock starts. You go into the bathroom and you start for 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 30 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minutes. And you're coming out and you're paying him, and you're coming out and you're paying him. It doesn't have to be the bathroom, just out of sight, out of mind. You could be working on this as he's in another room, and you could be sitting here doing this right now, talking, right? Say you're doing emails, working on the computer, or watching videos, whatever. You say, okay, that was a good test, and you go out and you break them. Anyway, so I don't think like in the beginning you would be doing that, but I also think the ultimate goal is for him to just get more confident without you. And so I think by doing these exercises, it'll really be helpful. And if you desensitize leaving often to other rooms, I think it'll break down. I think say you didn't even work on the place, you stopped talking to him, and throughout your day, you got up and walked into the other room, shut the door, waited 30 seconds and came back out. I think over time, he's going to be less attached to you.
Okay.
Right now, if you're getting up and talking to him and saying, it's okay, I'll be right back, and you're rushing back out and talking to him and petting him immediately when you come back out, I think that attachment's not going to go away. But I think if you just kill the talking, basically what you don't want to do is make a big deal out of something that's not, because then he will make it a big deal. If you're getting up to go to the kitchen to grab a snack, he doesn't need to know that. You don't have to say, hey, buddy, I'll be right back. Because what happened, and I get it, right? That's why I do what I do, is I'm a dog owner and lover first. I totally understand. When your dog looks at you with those eyes like, oh, you're leaving me, aren't you? You want to say, it's okay, buddy. I'm just going to the kitchen to get an apple. You want to say that because it makes you feel good. But of course, he hears, you're like, he's like, oh, yeah. He doesn't know. So I think that there's just like many different things that you can do. But those are some things that will be really helpful. So as far as you getting up and taking a shower for 20, 30 minutes, I think over time, if you just get up and walk away, get up, walk away, get up, walk away, no big deal, no big deal, no big deal. And then if you walk into a room, he's standing there when you get out, you just walk straight through him. It's not mean. It's not cruel.
I was going to say the other thing he does is if I go in my room and I close the doors, I could be in there for 2 hours and I can open the door and he's laying there waiting.
Sure. That's normal. And again, like, whatever that's what he chooses to do. And you just, when you come out, you step over him and walk away. So you're not ignoring him because obviously you don't love him or you don't like him. You're just ignoring him because you don't want to make him feel like that was worth his wait, right? Don't make him feel like when you come out of there, he's going to get love. Cause then you've conditioned him to wait outside of your, he's like, hey, I missed that person. Goes to your door. He knows you're in there. He waits. You come out. Hey, buddy, smush his face, kiss him, pet him. What were you doing? So, and then he's like, okay, this is what I need to do to get attention. Now say one day you're doing this for a couple days, a week, 2 weeks. And then one day you realize that he didn't get up and follow you. That's when you get over and give him all that, hey, buddy, and just give him a little bit of it, not too much, but you just say, hey, this is where you get paid, you know? Yeah. And you just kind of toggle with it a little bit. It's very discretionary on how the dog reacts. And you don't want to go over and make a big deal, but you want to go, like, just go over and pet the dog really calmly, good boy, and just walk away.
Okay. I have an issue with loving my dogs a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I cuddle them and talk to them, but like you say, they don't have a freaking clue what I'm saying. So
yeah. And it's, I call it selfish love. And because they don't, so humans, we show affection and emotion differently than mm-hmm. dogs do. Right. We're very different creatures because we can open our mouth and say something and it affects your heart. It affects your emotions. I hate you. I love you. You look pretty. You look ugly. These things are like, we understand what that means. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So with dogs, I completely understand what you're saying. Trust me. That's why I do what I do. But I've learned over the years what that creates to dogs. And that's why, you know, I think it's crucial for us to just understand that. Like, I guess I'm correcting you for saying I love my dogs and I love my dogs too, but I show it through different outlets. I pet my dogs. I kiss my dogs. I talk to my dogs. I lay on my dogs. I do all of those things. But if there were ever a problem where my dog didn't understand me, got anxiety, got stressed, I wouldn't be doing those things. So you have to just make sure you're at the right place in your relationship with your dog to do these things. Because if your dog is vulnerable and your dog feels like at any moment you're going to poof, disappear, and you're overdoing the love and affection, physical, human love, right? The goo goo gaga stuff. If you're overdoing that, it can create an unhealthy thing. And I can tell you out of the almost 14 years of professionally working with dogs, specifically with behavior, some of the worst cases I've ever, ever, ever dealt with are dogs who have been neglected, abandoned, or abused, got taken into a home, that person feeling emotionally upset about what had happened to that dog, and them never telling the dog no, letting the dog do whatever they want, giving them all this treats, beds, no structure, and those are the worst dogs I've ever had cases with, because they went from a very polarizing opposite of terrible situations to love and support and everything, but in a very polarizing way. So then basically the dog says, I understand that you love me. This is something I've never felt before. You don't know what you're doing. You're talking to me way too much. You're not giving me any structure. You're letting me do whatever I want. Now I'm going to become the nastiest dog on the planet to protect you, because I love you. So, does that make sense? So they basically didn't have anything, and then now they have everything. And because they have everything, they protect that person who gave them everything, because within the same token, so you want, that's why we call balanced dog training. We are balanced, yeah. Right? We understand, just, hey, good, great job. You did awesome. You deserve everything. But hey, when you do something wrong, I got to let you know about it. And so having that balance and having that structure, it's not just balance in operant conditioning and positive reinforcement and positive punishment. It's also balance and structure and affection. It's all, so you got to have balance throughout your life. It can't, so there's some training camps that just one ended. Love and affection only. No no's, no negatives, no nothing. Just do whatever you want. No corrections, nothing. And dogs, just like with people, like I told you earlier, I went on a 5-day vacation at a beautiful place. By day three, I was losing my mind, to be honest with you. Yeah. I need that. And dogs are very much like that. So anyway, so that's a little tangent for you. And I just wanted to kind of, I wanted to open up your eyes to what I see in the dog world, because that's my vision, because this is all I do. And it's all I've done my whole adult life is get into the minds of these dogs. And so when you say, I'm guilty of loving my dog, I want you to just understand what that actually means. Because there's a difference between, you know, tough love, right? Kids kicking and screaming because, again, they wanted to do something that was just nobody in their right mind would allow them to do, but they think, I got to have it. And you're like, you can't. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out.
Okay. No, that totally makes sense. And like I said, I've watched your videos where people have done that and they talk too much to their dogs, and then you start working with them and they're like, holy shit, this actually works when I don't.
Yeah.
And he's, like I said, he's good. He could sit, he could give paw. He stays for a little bit. We're still working on that. But worst case scenario, I think I'm only like 4 hours from you, but if I really do struggle with him getting the collar, do you do like a one day kind of appointment where I could, if I absolutely have to with him, and I just can't control him for whatever reason, come in and do a face-to-face and get your help on walking him? I'm hoping that doesn't have to happen.
Yeah. So yes and no. So we have two different facilities. Yeah. We're in Saratoga, Clifton Park, Albany area. And so, yeah, we're not too far from you compared to what other people travel to get to us. Cause you're in New York. So the answer is yes, but also no. So I do one-on-ones privately within a group environment for a weekend. So we do about 3 days, and it's like a little mini seminar with three to sometimes four people, and I usually do that like twice a month. I don't do just one on one. My staff does one. Like if you wanted to email and say, hey, I just want an introduction on how to use these things. Because there's so many different businesses that I'm running right now with the merch and the content creation and the two facilities and this.
Yeah.
There's so much. So I don't go into the facility regularly like my trainers do. I go in like once or twice a week to just do business owner stuff. So, and then the only time that I train privately at the facility is when we do those programs. It's called the out-of-state program. And so that all of that information is on my website, where you come in and you actually work with me privately. And we also do group classes too. And so we've had many, many, many people come in with foster dogs for this reason, because A, it helps, because my big thing, as you know, is education. So all the information that I give you is the same information I give to the animal behavioral college students that I certify in dog training. So you become, because if you're going to be fostering dogs, especially, you know, big dogs like that, you know, it's beneficial to you, but it's also beneficial to the dog to give the dog a more successful assessment of like a professional like myself to say, hey, you know, here's what we've done, here's the things we're going to continue to do. So that's what we do. But if that's something that's like out of your reach or out of your availability, we do have options where if you wanted to come in and just do a private session one-on-one, you could probably get a one-on-one just hour session with one of my staff for an afternoon as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check that out on the website and see how we do. I'll work with him for a little bit, and hopefully that will.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will work.
There's also a I don't. So in Buffalo, there's also another company called Canine Connection, and Tyler Muto, which is another colleague, a friend of mine, owns the company. That's also a very reputable company that's very familiar with what we do, which is, if you're in the Buffalo area, it would obviously be a lot closer and easy and accessible for you. So they're pretty – whereabouts are you? Are you in Buffalo? Or are you in, like, Lockport, or you're
– Hamburg.
Okay.
So just south.
Yeah, so that would be a lot more convenient as far as training goes. You can go up there for an afternoon and get that done. I don't know the business model that they set up and what they offer, but that's another reputable company that will do similar work to whatever I'm doing, unless you're specifically wanting to work with me for the weekend. So that's another option.
Okay. I will check out both of them and see, because I'm going to continue fostering and I want to be able to make better before they go to new houses. So
yeah, it's great.
I just want to be really educated and make sure that I'm using equipment the right way. And you know,
yeah, totally.
So,
totally.
All right. I totally appreciate your time.
Yeah. No worries. Thank you.
And I will, what did you say? It's by nobaddogs.com.
Yeah. It's just it's BUY. So like purchase, like buy nobaddogs.com. We have the 3.2 click locks. And like I said, get the safety clip, get the click lock 3.2, and get yourself like an extra pack of prong collars. I think we have two left on the site, so I would just do that today.
Okay, perfect. I'll do that now. Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. It was nice to meet you. Have a wonderful day and good luck. All right, you guys, we've reached the end of the podcast, which means it's time to answer questions. I don't have any new ones. I've answered them all. So right now, it pens. It's like a pending thing. So if you asked your questions like last week, sometimes it's pens. It pens for like a week. It's a pending thing. I don't know what happens, to be honest, but don't worry. I'll answer it next time. And again, if you guys have your specific dog training questions, make sure you go over to the reviews and leave a review, and I'll answer it next time. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next Monday. Bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.